Hey friends, welcome back to The Collective's Conversation, where we're having conversations at the intersection of faith and life. This week, we've got Ainsley B. on the show with us. She's one of my favorite friends to have a conversation with. You're going to love her. She has such a heart for young adults and teens, especially young adult girls and teen girls. And she wrote a book called Don't Date a Boo-Boo Dude. We're going to get into what a boo-boo dude is. If you don't know, you're going to know after this show. So, hey, do me a favor. Hit that like, that subscribe button. Share this with a friend. Something great from the episode is has spoke to you. Tag me on Instagram or Ainsley. We'd love to share it and love to have you part of the conversation. And so without any delay, let's get to our conversation. Friends, welcome back to the Collective's Conversations podcast, having conversations at the intersection of faith and life. I have one of my favorite friends to talk to. You know her as Ainsley B. If you follow her on social media, she's a writer, speaker. She has her own podcast, the Wild Confidence Podcast. She's an Enneagram coach. We love to talk Enneagram. And she is the proud author of Don't Date a Boo-Boo Dude. And we will talk about what a boo-boo dude is. But welcome to the show. It's been like 3 years since we've talked.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I've had a whole child since then.
A whole child. I'm glad it was a whole child. I'm glad that's how it worked out. So, yeah, you were on the leadership trip, I think, in 2021 with my friend Rob.
Wow.
And you have a baby girl. I guess she's not a baby much anymore, a toddler.
The whole toddler.
Now, correct me, right? You named her Golden?
Yeah, her name's Golden, and we call her Goldie.
Okay, so where's the name come from?
Okay, so I love this question because who doesn't love to talk about their kids?
Right.
But Justin and I, right when we first met, we met on a blind date. And then it was like 2 days later, I was leaving for a trip with my dad and my brother to Colorado. And we went to Denver. And it was like, I don't even know what we just kind of went on some random adventures there, but I was praying like, oh my gosh, Lord, this guy is so cute. We had such a great time on our first date, such a great connection. So like, give me confirmation, you know, that kind of stuff. And we talked almost every night that I was gone, which was really sweet. Then we ended up getting married right outside of Denver in Rocky Mountain National Park. Then on our way to Hawaii on a random trip, we find out we're pregnant in Denver. So I'm like, all of these milestones have happened in Denver. Let's name our kid Denver. So I loved the name Denver. I was hellbent on it, but it conflicted with a family member and a story. Well, then I was like, well, what's just around Denver? Like, what's a cool little area around Denver? And when I looked at the map, I saw Golden and I was like, Golden, like that is so awesome. And it can still tell the story. It's Golden's a little town right outside of Denver. So she was named after a city in Colorado because in Colorado, significant things happened in our relationship. And now she carries that story with
her. Awesome. One of my favorite Christmas movies is Four Christmases. Have you ever watched that?
Oh, yeah. Denver. That was one of the reasons.
Where like every one of the kids is named after the city they're conceived in. Like, like Vince Vaughn's character is Orlando, but nobody calls him Orlando. So that makes me think of that. Sorry, we're totally off track. But that's one of my, like, I quote that movie all the time. Like lately, anytime something happens, I tell Rachel, I go, this child is a blessing to the both of us.
I love it. And that is something that people brought up whenever I said Denver. They were like, oh, like Four Christmases. And I was like, well, no. But yes. So no, obviously didn't go with that. But
okay. Well, I'm glad you have a whole child in Golden. She's a beautiful little girl. I love tracking with your stories and seeing her. And Justin's quite a bit taller than you though, right? He's like 7'4" or something. I don't know, I'm making that up.
Pretty much. Yes. He's like 6'8", 6'9". He's very tall, which means Goldie is very tall. Like she is, she'll pass me up by fifth grade, I'm sure.
Okay. Well, awesome.
I mean, she is very tall.
Let's talk. You had recently gotten married the last time we talked and you were, I think, releasing or just had released Boo Boo Dude. So for maybe the parents who are listening, your heart is for young girls and teenage girls and young adults. Tell us what a boo-boo dude is and why you wrote the book.
Absolutely. So a boo-boo dude is someone who leaves you on red, leaves you wondering where you stand with them as a manipulation tactic, or leaves you with no explanation and no closure. You know, all of these treatments that you think of when you think of just something you don't deserve. Like when you think of, you don't deserve a lack of communication or a lack of respect. When we try and have those conversations with young adults, though, that language doesn't always translate, right? I can't always sit a 15-year-old girl down and be like, he is not respecting of your boundaries. She's like, what? You know, like, she's like, I don't even know what a boundary is right now, or I don't know if I even want to have one with this guy because I'm so in love with him. Mm-hmm. So I wrote this book as a light way to have a heavy conversation, because what I noticed in working with young adults, I've been working in youth ministry since 2010, I think, in some form or capacity. And every time I was like, I can't have these hardcore conversations with them. I have to enter into this conversation lighter or in a funny way or something that keeps their guard down. So I don't know if it's just because I'm in Louisiana and we just have a different vernacular or what, but boo-boo is like bad or lame or whatever. So whenever you're saying like, oh, that's boo-boo, we might talk about that. This is like something we said in high school all the time. Like, this was not something that I made up that I know of. Maybe I did in high school, I don't remember. But it's one of those things where if it's a meal or something, you're like, oh, that was okay. It was kind of boo-boo. Like, bleh. And I was like, that's how I'm going to talk about dating with these teenagers. So I started having these conversations that they would be like, well, he's doing this. He's not really like responding to me. He's keeping me like wondering and guessing for days. And I'm like, girl, that's boo-boo. Like, he's not that interested if he's doing that. That's kind of boo-boo. And they would kind of giggle, but then it would like, it was funny, but then it also offered a moment of reflection where they were like, yeah, actually you're right. That is kind of boo-boo. Or it got to, for me specifically, I found myself in an abusive relationship that I never thought that I would ever be in, because I'm very strong-willed and I'm very loud and I'm just who I am, you know? And I'm the kind of person that people say, I can't believe that you ever found yourself in that situation because you're so headstrong. I'm like, well, that's the power of manipulation. Yeah. But no one knew how to speak to me about it, right? Like, no one could, without it being so serious and it feeling like an intervention. And I was like, so against that and so isolated and manipulated. So after that, I met up with my college roommate. After that conversation happened and years go by, you know, I was like, how should I have been spoken to? Or like, what would I have received? How would I have understood what she was saying? Yeah. And that became Don't Date a Boo-Boo Dude, was my story, the stories of other girls that I've walked through life with, and how we can help one another avoid these toxic relationships, avoid abusive relationships, but also just avoid being treated poorly.
Right.
So it's not even, it's such a pendulum swing of treatment. It's not 100% abusive relationships. It's not 100% just, he didn't call me back. You know, it's a wide range of behaviors and dating conversations that we talk about. And the goal is for girls to raise your standards, realize your worth, and remove shame from the dating game. And this really is for every female and every, I mean, any parent. I would also say every parent should read the book. Every leader of a young adult should read the book. But really, like, it's funny, I'll get messages from my mom's friends that are like, I learned so much from this for myself.
Yeah.
And so it's really an identity book disguised as a dating book, but it's the book I wish I would have had when I was younger.
Yeah. So as a dad of daughters, like, I have two, one's a young adult in college, one's finishing her junior year. That's like, takes my breath away a little bit that they're almost done with high school, at least.
Yeah.
What would you say maybe to dads or to moms who are listening who have sort of teens and young adults or tweens even who are starting to enter this like dating pool and liking boys. How do we engage that conversation? Because if I went to my daughter and said, don't date a boo-boo dude, she would laugh at me. And it may open the conversation, but how can we really get into the heart of the conversation to go, here's what you need to recognize? Because you said it, you fall in love fast and everything's great. And he's going to he's going to text me back, or he's going to snap me back, whatever it is. How, as a parent, can we step into that conversation?
So one thing that I have encouraged parents and kids to do is like go through this book together and be like, okay, I'm reading this book. I want you to read it with me. And there's reflection questions at the end. So you can kind of go through the questions together. But it's also just, if your kid's like, no, I'm not doing that, that's lame, then it's also exactly how you just said, hey, don't date a boo-boo dude. And they might laugh. And then you can also say, hey, do you know what that means? Like, do you want to talk about what that means? Do you know, what are some like things you should look for and what things you should avoid? What are some things you should move forward? Like, what says, okay, yes, let's move forward in this relationship. Okay, let's take a step back. And the other thing that I want parents and anybody working with young adults to keep in mind is that it is a marathon, not a sprint. Mm-hmm. It's not that we have to exhaust these conversations, but it is that we have to exhaust our expectations. Because I think that we expect to have a few conversations about it and then they'll know. Right. But we are all human. It takes us 15 million times to learn something before we actually learn it. But if we still have the conversations, at least it'll recall to their memory and maybe save them from one or two decisions they would have gone down. But, you know, I always think of this one girl that I mentored for a long time. It took me 3 years to get her to leave this boo-boo dude. 3 years of constant communication almost about this. I would co-author text messages for her and I would do all of these things and talk with her through. And after the third year, you know, she finally got it. It finally clicked and she was free and never went back to that behavior from a guy. So the good news is that it might take a while, but once they get it, they get it.
That's good. Because I think a lot of times what we see with young adults and teenagers is the repeated behavior. You may break it with one boy or one young man, mm-hmm. and they go back to the same patterns. This is years of youth ministry and working with young adults. It's things we're walking through this week as pastors, you know, seeing these trends of behaviors. And it's hard to step in sometimes and just go, hey, this is a pattern. Because I think anytime you're in a relationship, you're so close, you can't get the larger perspective. And I think it's really an important conversation as parents, as pastors, as mentors, as people who care about teenagers and young adults to engage in these conversations. I think the difficulty of it as we kind of move forward, like when I was a teenager many, many years ago, most of everything we did was out in the open, other than like we would pass letters. If we talked on the phone, it was like in the house, like this like 30-foot cord I could take to my room or cordless phone.
Yeah.
Everything's sort of in secrecy right now. Like they can communicate privately through devices and all kinds of different ways. How can we step into space and kind of see the truth of what's happening that may be happening in private behind screens?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think that staying in touch with even just the language of it all, like you said, text me back or snap me back, that kind of tells the young adult that you are still engaged and you do know this world. Mm-hmm. You know, I think one of the things that I know I was guilty of is, you know, yelling, "You don't understand," to my mom. And it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, she might not understand the form of communication that is happening at play. But if she could speak that language about it, like know what the apps are, know the dangers of them, and just know what language is going on. And honestly, I wouldn't even ask your kid. I would ask your kid's friend or, you know, a little cousin or something like that, because your kid is going to make fun of you or going to feel like you don't. That's whenever they're going to think you just don't understand. Yeah. But if you can get the intel from another kid, then you can be like, I know what that is. Like I'm in the, you know, I would always be so honest with students. I would be like, I know how this works. I'm not dumb and don't lie to me. And they wouldn't. I mean, well, you know, I'm sure some of them did, but for the majority, I think they appreciated that honesty and that I knew what was going on behind the apps. And like, I understand teenagers and I understand this technology. So don't lie to me about it because I'm not dumb.
Yeah. I think.
And they would just kind of, well, okay.
Rachel and I have surprised a lot of the students and young adults we work with and even those in our own house with the like understanding the apps. And we're like, especially with the young ladies that we've talked to, and it's like, if he's going to slide in your DMs, like it's okay. Maybe the first conversation. But if he really wants to talk to you, he's going to text you or call you. Like, it's just
totally,
that's the standard. It's a weird standard to have or a weird kind of measure to have. But if he doesn't want it to all be hidden, he's going to take it to a text, an actual text, or he's actually going to call you and have a conversation. But if he's staying in the snaps, he probably falls in this category of what you're calling a boo-boo dude. And that's probably where he's going to land and stay for a while. And so we kind of surprise people at having that kind of language and being able to get identify, like, if somebody's serious about really communicating with you, they're going to either want to text you, call you, or talk to you in person. And so,
yeah. And I love that. Like, all of that language, all of that is exactly what I would tell people to do is be like, just learn it. Just learn it and use it. Yeah. And be like, I don't care if you think it's cheesy that I'm saying it. I know that that's what this is.
Yeah.
Like, I know that this is what you're saying. So I know what it is. I know what it means to slide in your DMs. I know what it means. And with that, you can Google that. You can get the app and figure it out. There's YouTube videos. You know, there's endless resources of how you can do that for sure.
I think that's the key is like, we have to, like, I'm not an expert on any of it, but I'm at least aware of it, you know, and language changes fast. Mm-hmm. Like, my kids' language changes like weekly. Like, I don't remember what they said this week, but I was like, I have no idea what that means. Like, I was smoking, cooking something. I was cooking. That's what it was. I was cooking this week.
Oh yeah.
Like, I wasn't cooking. Like, I was like not making food, but I was like cooking. I'm like, I don't even know what that means. And so, but as we have to stay aware of the shifting changes as best we can. Now, I have a rule that like, if I start saying it, maybe they'll quit saying it. So if I'm going to use the word cooking a lot, now they'll quit saying cooking because it's no longer, dad says it's no longer cool. So. But I think the overall like story is we have to stay aware with teenagers, young adults, whether we're on the side of pastoring or parenting or mentoring, like we just have to stay aware because I think so much is happening in a world where technology as a tool has become a very dangerous place. What would you say maybe to parents about technological boundaries? What boundaries maybe should be set, if any?
Oh, definitely some. I mean, but I do think it depends on your kid and how they handle it. I think it is certainly not a one size fits all. But one thing that I know this sounds it sounds kind of archaic and it sounds silly, but it's the truth is the more you can get them outside and the more you can get them having real life experiences, obviously the better. I mean, honestly, just a vitamin D is like bring them in the sun. And that's a silly boundary, but it gets them out of their head and on like they're where their feet are. That's why I loved like youth group games and going to youth group and all of that, because there was just silly fun stuff to do. But as far as like it, whenever it comes to the actual screen and actual technology, I think the number one thing is open communication between the parent and the student. Like, this is what you're allowed to have. This is what you're not allowed to have. And this is why. My mom was very honest with me. Like, she was a children's advocacy. She worked at a children's advocacy center and was a counselor for sexually and physically abused women and children. She did not hide stories from me. She was like, the reason you can't go to this party is because inter explicit story, you know, like she would be like, this can happen. And I was like, Mom, that's not going to happen to me. And she's like, you don't know that. You can't say that.
Right.
So whenever it comes to predators online, like I think obviously judging by your kids' age, talk about that. Talk about the bullying that happens online. Talk about its effect on mental health. Say, are you struggling with anxiety and depression? That could be why. So this is what we're going to do. We're going to give it a trial run and take, you're going to, you know, not use it at night or whatever that looks like. I know my middle sister had to turn in her phone at 9 p.m. whenever she was in middle school and some into high school, I think. And she was like, that is so stupid. That is so ridiculous. But her mental health was saved by it.
I think it was maybe Simon Sinek who said, like, we hand teenagers, when we hand them an iPhone or a device, we're basically handing them a loaded gun at 12 or 13. Like, totally. I don't know that we knew this a decade ago. But we know it now. And it's, and I think we're becoming more aware, even as adults, like how overly engaged we are in things that don't matter. Like in conversations and things, like as you're online, things just don't matter. And I think what you're saying about getting outside, I'm trying to become more analog in my world. So we've got a, maybe it was 2 years ago for Christmas or birthday one, Rachel bought me a record player. And so we have a used bookstore, huge used bookstore here and just down the road. And I'll go buy just old vinyl records and we'll put those on sometimes just to be analog again. You know, I love Apple Music. I will stream music all day long. I've even this week, as we were having this conversation on Spotify, and dug out the old Ainsley B tracks from Spotify. So you get 3 cents because of me. So things people don't know about you. But there's something about being analog and being in touch and feeling some things, like an actual book outside. I think
and it's they love critical. That.
Yeah.
They love the, like, I mean, I used to go in college, thrift shopping was my favorite thing. And I just loved the feel of like older stuff. And what could I find at my great grandmother's house? Like, they really do crave that kind of thing. They really crave a break.
Right.
They truly crave a break from it because that is their lives. They're inundated with that from the moment they wake up to the moment they go to sleep. So whenever they get a little mental health break, I'm telling you, they love it. Whenever I had, and I would also say, like, as adults, it's up to us, even if you're not a parent or a pastor, like, find some students to pour into, because I just think it's our responsibility to lead them well. If we want our future to be promising and whatever we want it to be, we need to invest in the next generation, because that's our future leaders and everything. And they crave connection, they crave authenticity, and putting up a phone. I mean, and as parents, you know, whenever you see that phone go up, you know they're gone. They're immediately elsewhere. And so they're doing the same thing. Whenever they see your phone go up, they know you're gone. Mm-hmm. So do those, like, old school stuff, whether it's rollerblading outside. My mom literally told me the other day, she's like, I want to go get some rollerblades. I'm like, you're so funny. Let's go get some rollerblades. But that's the connection that my youngest sister is like, okay, mom, that's kind of weird, but let's go, you know? Yeah. And my youngest sister is 15. Like, she's in the thick of it.
Oh, yeah.
She is. I learned so much from her, just of the struggles of teenagers still. Mm-hmm. And it breaks my heart. But they just went skiing just to get her outside, just to go do something that I know that not everybody can just up and go skiing, but just get outside or go get analog or something like that. Talk to them about the 80s or the 90s or whatever. That kind of stuff is honestly still fascinating to me. And I grew up in the 90s.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's always a fascination with decades behind you. Like, I grew up fascinated by the 60s, and my kids are definitely, like, they love everything 90s right now. Like, their clothing, their hairstyles, everything is 90s. And I'm like, I don't want to go back, but I'll go back because you're there and you're intrigued by it and we can talk about it. And so I think, getting in touch with some of those things that are real in real life things. I think you said something really critical I want to come back to is for parents, pastors, whoever, as adults in the room, if we pick our phone up, they know we've disconnected. And they're done.
Yeah.
Like, they're doing the conversation. They'll walk out of the room. They'll pick theirs up and walk out of the room. Because they take that as, you're not important enough for me. That's a cue to them. And so I've Listen, I'm terrible about picking up my phone, but trying to be better about it in certain contexts, especially with my kids, like not having it in the room, things like that. By far imperfect at it, but I know cues it gives when I do.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and even obviously noticing how you are whenever you get off, like whenever you're with them outside or with them doing something, you're having such a good time. You know, you're creating just as many core memories as they are.
Yeah. Core memories. That's another word they've taught me. So
everything's
a core memory now. I don't know what I have memories. I think I have memories. I don't know if they're core or not. Like, so obviously people can catch on from our conversations that we have a heart for young adults and just students in general. What have you learned maybe since COVID? Because when we first talked, it was 2021. It was the heart of COVID, heart of just all this world that was having shutdowns and different things. What have you learned from post COVID? And you mentioned authenticity. Mm-hmm. How students are and young adults and teenagers and even adults, how are we getting back to authentic connections, or are we?
I think we are because we want it so bad, and I'm very thankful for that. I think as far as like adults that, you know, have kids, I think it's like the performance piece we're kind of tired of when it comes to online and social media. Like, I don't need to see your brand. I just want to see what you got from the grocery store, because do I need it from the grocery store? You know? Yeah. And that's kind of like what I'm consuming. And then these kids and students, like, they just want to know, are you safe? Are you a safe person? Can I trust you? Like, that kind of stuff. And I think that the more authentic you are and the more honest you are with them within reason, the more they will appreciate that and do the same. So even if you're on your phone, I'm thinking back to like real situations with students. Even if you're on the phone, on your phone, I can connect with them by being like, have you seen this TikTok? Or did you see this quote? This is so good. And they just like feel seen by that. They're like, wait, you thought of me whenever you saw that? Like, that's so sweet. So I will and here's one thing. If you want to authentically connect with them, anything that makes you think of them, send it to them. Mm-hmm. Because it might be, you know, blowing up their phone, but they'll be like, oh my gosh, this is how often you thought of me. And you're just speaking my language. If you're far, you know, not together in that moment. My mom does it, and sometimes it drives me nuts. I'm like, Mom, you have sent me 17 reels today. But I'm also like, she wanted to share that with me. You know,
Ainsley, is a reel is just a TikTok from 3 weeks ago.
Exactly. Exactly. And my husband is a real guy, which is embarrassing for me as someone who works with students. I'm like, yeah, he's a real guy. I'm a TikTok girl, which means he is three steps behind.
Right.
And I'm one step ahead. But I'm trying to think also of like that also always was a connection point. Or they would even sometimes make fun of me for some stuff. I'd be like, oh, I saw this cortisol balancing exercise. And they're like, what's cortisol? And I'm like, you get anxiety? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, well, your cortisol is high. So we're going to lay on the ground and we're going to put our feet on a chair and we're going to breathe. And I would have them all do it with me. And they're like, this is so weird. And I'm like, but we're having a great time. And it just got them off their phones for 5 seconds. And guess what? It balanced their cortisol. They were a little less stressed whenever we stood up. And so just those kind of silly things too. They're like, okay, y'all come try this with me. I just learned it.
And I think it was interesting. I remember it was probably whenever it got announced, November maybe, where Merriam-Webster, the dictionary people, announced their word of the year. And the word of the year was authentic, which I was like shocked by, you know, all the things, because we create words all the time and it's usually some pop culture word that shows up. And of all the words they chose, that there is this overwhelming desire from all of us, not just students, but all of us, to get back to something real, get back to something natural, like that we crave. And I think you're on point. We're craving it, but I don't know that anybody's saying it. I don't think especially students are going to come to you and go like, you know what I need? I need to go outside and sit under a tree. Like, they're not going to say that unless they're a little more self-aware. No. Or I need to go for a walk or whatever. But I think for those of us who have that understanding, we need to like help guide that and be like, hey, what we need is something real. You need something you can feel and touch, and that's not flat like a screen.
Yeah.
And so even as adults, I think we have to foster that more in our own life and just sort of be authentic and have real relationships. Because I think that's something that even as a pastor, people are like, hey, I need community. There's that crying out for that. So,
and one thing that they struggle with that I try and make a point in doing is eye contact. Mm-hmm. They cannot hold eye contact. And I'm like, I am forcing you, like, look at me in the eyes for 5 seconds. And you would be amazed how hard it is for them to do that.
Yeah.
They're just like, I want to look away. This is so uncomfortable. I'm like, yeah, but the power that is in eye contact is what you're looking for, but you're trying to find it through an iPhone lens and you're not going to get it. So if you're thinking about how we can post COVID connect, it's eye contact. It's board game night. It's I'm going to meet you where you are. In the 90s that are traumatic for me, but the fashion is coming back and it makes me want to die. But like, let's go there. Let's go analog. Let's do these things that inspire creativity and curiosity.
Yeah.
And then create the connection to have hard conversations.
Yeah. We often talk about it with, not just our kids, but I think with students in general, we have what we call the rule of permission. And the rule of permission is that I have to, in some ways, earn the right to be heard by you to say hard things. Because if I say hard things and you're not ready to hear them, I can say them, but they're unheard. But if I've built a relationship with you, if I've earned some of that trust, and really it's a trust issue, and I've earned it by being present, maybe I'm making you feel seen or whatever. You talked about sending the reels or the TikToks. Now I have permission to show up. And as we go back to the boo-boo conversation, I can say that dude's no good. Like, that's not a good dude, because now I have permission to say that into your life. And I think sometimes we rush to the hard conversations without permission to be heard.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're so spot on. And the one thing that if I feel like I need to say something to someone and I don't know if I've quite got the permission, I just start asking questions just about them and their life. And like, hey, what is your day to day like? What was the high of your day? What was the low of your day? What is this? How's that relationship going? What does it look like for y'all to connect? What are you fighting over right now? And it just kind of naturally can flow. But people love talking about themselves, especially students, and they really want that. They want you to be curious.
Right.
They just don't want you to be interrogating.
There's a way to ask questions without being over the top about it. But there's times, and again, like you've talked about with Express the book and different things, there's times to ask the hard questions, like, and it's and it's opening those conversations. So one of the things that you and I love and sort of share is this passion for the Enneagram. I feel like the first time we talked, it was like the it thing of the time. Like, everybody's talking Instagram.
Yeah.
It's kind of cooled off, but there's still some value to it. For our friends who maybe not know what the Enneagram is, give us a quick overview of what that is.
Yeah, I would definitely say this is such a great connection point with young adults because it inspires self-awareness in all parties. But it's definitely, it's like a map or a guide to the healthiest version of yourself by way of a personality assessment. There's a lot of different ones that you can kind of take or understand, but my favorite program, which is what I'm certified under, is the Your Enneagram Coach program, which is a gospel-centered approach to the Enneagram. So you might think about Myers-Briggs or DISC or something whenever you think about personality assessments, and those are great. They focus more on your traits or your strengths or weaknesses, and the Enneagram focuses on your motivation behind your behaviors. So why are you doing the thing that you're doing? Why do you feel this way? Why do you react this way? And that's what's so fascinating. You typically don't find your type until you're in your 20s or a young adult, but it is really fun to kind of have the conversations with teens and young adults in general and just be like, what do you think about this? Do you feel like you're like this or something like that? So that is a brief about the Enneagram on what it is.
Right. I discovered it probably 6 or 7 years ago. And it is, and again, it's just a framework and a personality test. It just kind of gets some language. Yeah, a lot of people got really wrapped up in it and it became almost overly their identity. But for me, it was just one of those things that kind of like gave language to how I was already living. I'm an Enneagram 2, for those wondering. I know we've talked about this before. And what was so revealing is it's called the Helper. I realized, like, as I read it, I was like, I probably say, I hope this helped. How can I help? Did it help? Like 8,000 times a day. Like, and it just was not because the Enneagram told me that was it, because that's what was happening in my life anyways. And like, it's crazy because some of the things that will come to pass, like I've just watched it play out is, you know, if Rachel's in the kitchen, Rachel, my wife's in the kitchen, maybe she's cooking or doing something and I hear it, it's like, I can't sit. I have to go help. Like, it's a hard wiring to me. And again, the Enneagram doesn't do anything but help identify some of this, maybe give language to it. But how has the Enneagram, or what about the Enneagram can help us understand our God-given design? You said the Enneagram coach, your Enneagram coach is a gospel-centric. How does it help us the design, understand the design of God in our life?
Oh man, I think that was the thing that helped me understand the like who God made whenever he made me is the Enneagram. And that's what it was so powerful for me. I remember being like, I would, you know, just growing up asking God, why do I do this? Why do I do that? What is this? What is that? Or just not understanding things about myself. And then I discover I also am an Enneagram 2. And all of these actions, all of these thoughts, all of these feelings started making sense.
Right.
And then I was able to say, oh, you, like God, you did that on purpose. Mm-hmm. You purposefully created someone who has the desire to help others because I understand what you mean when you're saying be the hands and feet of Jesus. Like that makes sense to me. And then it might understand another passage might make, hold on, sorry, my words are getting jumbled up. Another passage may make more sense to another type. And that's how we can all be the body of Christ.
Yeah.
You know, it really, there's 9 different basic personality types, but whenever you think about them in the framework of faith, you do finally see the body of Christ. Therefore you're growing in empathy and understanding with one another. You're able to tolerate and give grace to one another. And I feel like not only did I fall in love with who God made finally, probably for the first time in my life, but not just as myself, but as a whole body of Christ.
Yeah.
I understood that's why you made people this way. That's why you made people this way. What a beautiful mosaic of humanity that we are all in your image, which shows us more about your character and about who you are. And I think it not only helped me understand myself, but my faith a lot more.
Yeah. I think one of the things it did for me, I always kind of knew this, but I think again, it gave a lot of language, is that everybody didn't think like I thought. Or act like, so as somebody who is constantly trying to help and be a helper, and I'm like, I don't know why other people don't act like this or why other people don't do this. But, and so it was freeing to go like, oh, they're not wired the way I'm wired. It doesn't make them worse or better or make me worse or better, but the uniqueness of how God set me up is different than the uniqueness of how God set them up. And when you really kind of learn who you are, you can learn to work in complement with some of those things. It's kind of that way in my marriage with Rachel. Like I am a broad strokes, big picture, like kind of type visionary type thing. And she is so nuts and bolts in the small things. She's a type 1, like, you know, that. And so those things kind of complement each other. And so what I've learned about what you're saying with the body of Christ is that when we start to understand how God made us, it can work in complement with how God has made somebody else instead of in competition or in conflict, which I think is sometimes when we don't understand ourselves or somebody else is really what happens is just conflict. It's like, why are you not like me?
Yeah, absolutely. You're spot on, 100%.
So we're talking Enneagram. Can we talk about it, or is it too early?
We can. Yeah. No, we can talk about it. I don't have I don't have it in my hand, but we do have an Enneagram for Teens book coming out early July. I'm not sure.
Early July.
I think it's July 9th, maybe. But yeah, the Enneagram for Teens is coming out. And like I said, you don't really have your type nailed down until your 20s or early 20s-ish, probably. But it is awesome to have the conversation started and create some self-awareness in our teenagers. So it is a great book. If you wanted to go through that book with your teen, great book of connection. And I hope everyone enjoys it.
So what led you to write that book? Why the Enneagram? I know your heart's for teenagers, but what are you hoping maybe students and their parents can glean or gain from this?
Gosh, I am hoping it bridges a gap of communication and connection between parent and teenager by creating self-awareness and an open mind in teenagers. You know, that is what it gave me, was such a more open mind and a more understanding of myself. And I think if they can start that process sooner, maybe they can get a little bit further in the self-awareness journey than I was or than I am, you know, as their life goes on. It is not an end-all be-all kind of thing. You know, we already talked about it is a tool. The Bible is the only thing that can transform your life. However, I do think that this is such a great tool in helping reveal some things. And it gives, you know, leaders, parents, whoever, pastors, an opportunity of, hey, you can learn more about me too at the core. And we can learn about each other and we can connect on that and create some solid conversations on that.
We had all of our kids do it several years ago. I think probably 2020, 2021, sometime around there. When I first started learning about it, it was so interesting because as it revealed who I was, it began to reveal kind of who they were, like in pieces.
Yeah.
And it gave me so much more grace for my kids. Like,
yeah.
In the sense of like, oh, now I know why you have worst case thinking. Now I know why you perform or want to perform your best in this, because you fit, you know. Not that the type puts them in a box, but it just gives language to a little bit of how they act. And it just gave this sort of insight into going like, oh, now I see that, you know, I see that expression. Like, and they lived out, our youngest, Matthew, is 15. He's a 7 on the Enneagram through and through. like
so fun.
He had just turned 15. And we put him on a plane from Mozambique on a mission trip not by himself, but with the team. Like, Rachel and I didn't go. And he's like, cool, let's do it. I'm there. Yeah. Came back and was like, when do I go again? Like, you know, he's on a safari with like lions. And he's like, okay, when do I go again? So all these things that it just gave language to an awareness, or like just gave us sort of perspective of parents to go like, this is kind of who you are and how God's designed you. Especially for like Matthew, because he has a heart for missions. We're like, we know that God's going to send you somewhere, even now as you're 15, almost 16. We got to live kind of open-handed with that, because that's the design of God. So it's just, for us as parents, it was so revealing just to kind of a little deeper understanding of the motivations of our kids. I think that's the hope of your book, The Enneagram for Teens, coming out in July. So.
Yeah,
right? This is your the second book, or are you having a third? Right.
This is my third book total.
Okay.
Yep. And it's actually, I don't know if it's available for pre-order on Amazon yet, but it might be. If not, I know it's on ChristianBooks.com, and it'll be on Amazon soon. So we'll see. Whenever that happens, but yeah, I definitely want parents to be able to gain an understanding of language that can communicate and connect with their teen, and teens to open their mind to a little bit more about who they are.
Right. That's great. That's great.
So I'm excited.
Well, Ainsley, as always, you're one of my favorite conversations. One final question on the show, since the show is titled The Collective's Conversations, who is one person, historical present, fictional, or in your real life that you would want to sit down and have a conversation with?
I have thought about this question for days, days. And I'm like, I cannot just pick one person. And I should already be prepared for it, but I truly have spent days. The only person that keeps coming up in my mind, which is probably because I watched the movie recently, is Elvis. And I'm not even like an Elvis like crazy fan, but I was like, man, I would just love to have a conversation with him because I think about his impact in the music industry and yada, yada, yada. And I just watched the movie. So I'm like, now I have things to ask him.
Yeah. I have a funny Elvis story. It's not my own, actually, and I'll share it. So I was preaching at a church about a year and a half ago up the road for some friends of mine, and I was made an Elvis reference. I don't even know what it was. It was off the cuff, not even in my notes. And this older gentleman comes up to me after church, and he goes, "Let me tell you a story." And I was like, "Okay, cool." He's like, "There's a dentist that lives in your town," and he's like, "He's retired now." It's like he goes, "But he was the guy that they chose over Elvis for the Glee Club at high school, and Elvis didn't make the Glee Club. So, like, the last person picked was this guy who goes on to be a dentist. And, like, he's a dentist in our community. He's now retired, but he was chosen over Elvis for the high school Glee Club." And I was like, that's wild.
That is so funny. And then
Then the guy goes on to say, he's like, I used to drive Elvis's mom to the First Assembly of God there in Memphis. I was like, this is the craziest story I've ever been a part of in my life. I'm so glad I mentioned Elvis in the sermon. So,
no kidding. That's so funny.
So I've not talked to Elvis, and I don't think I will since he died the year I was born, but I've talked to somebody who's talked to his mom at least. So I got that going for me.
Yeah. And I don't even have like a deep connection or like, I'm not like a huge fan, but I'm just like, every time I watch a documentary or a movie about someone, that's the person that I like deep dive research, you know? Yeah. So I'm like, currently Elvis.
Yeah. Well, Ainsley, it's always a joy to talk to you. You're one of my favorite people to talk to. And
same. Thank you so much.
As we say here, always, you've got to seat the table. Thanks for being with us.
Love it. Thank you so much.
Wow, what a great conversation that was. Thanks for joining us in the conversation. If something from the conversation really stood out to you, would you share it and tag me on social media @Jeff_Pitts_ on Instagram? And we would love it if you would rate and review and subscribe to the show. That just helps us reach more people with these great conversations. And as we always say, you've got to seat the table. Thanks for joining the conversation.